Here for the WeRSC podcast, recapping the Boston College game and looking forward to the bye week in more ways than one. Guys, that game for the Trojans, it was one of those games that we say you can say trap game. You know the possibility is there. But yet when you look on the field at what happened, it was everything that you could look and predict and say, hey, worry about this, be aware of this. And yet you look on both sides of the line, and when you get beat as badly as the Trojans did on both sides of the line, there's not much you're going to be able to do about it in a football game, and Boston College certainly took advantage.
Well, I got to start with a mea culpa because I didn't think it was possible. I thought trap game, you know, no way. One last game, then they got the bye week. And my pal Mike Lamb was absolutely right. He said, what about the trap game? And he warned us last week on the podcast about it. And sure enough, they weren't prepared. And I will say they didn't look prepared as players, but I'll go even further and say that it didn't look like they were prepared as a coaching staff as well. And on both sides of the ball, Gary, you talked about it. It was up front on the line where this game was won and lost in the trenches, and the offensive line looked like freshmen. Even the guys that weren't freshmen looked like freshmen. And on the defensive side of the ball, it looked like we were absolutely unprepared for any sort of a read option type of game plan. You know, we're running this new 3-4 scheme. I like our three, meaning the down lineman three. The four that are behind them, especially when Hayes is not in there, I think we got some serious, serious question marks. And, you know, I don't know how much of that you sort of put on coaching and preparedness versus, because I was not at practice, versus execution and the players. But I'll tell you, the four linebackers looked lost out there. Were totally unprepared to play the read option. You had no option responsibilities whatsoever. To give up that much rushing and to be able to really not be able to run the ball or protect our quarterback on the offensive side was really, really disappointing when we had all come off of very, very high expectations the week before.
When your opponent outrushes you by a margin of 20-1, there's something seriously wrong. And 450 yards rushing versus 20, you've got to just go back to what you were doing. And I think that's what's more egregious. Is it the 20 yards rushing for USC, or is it giving up 450 against Boston College? And I don't know. So if you look at this as a coaching staff, you have to say we failed. We didn't do it right. And I don't know if it's a scheme thing defensively, Jeremy, or if it was where the players just weren't understanding and didn't comprehend what their responsibilities were. I don't know, but
let's talk about, I don't mean to cut you off, Mike, but let's talk about the defense first. Because,
all right,
you know, a couple weeks ago, you know, we sat there going into Stanford, and I don't mean to pat myself on the back because I was totally wrong about Boston College, but I don't know if you remember me saying that I liked how we matched up against Stanford.
Right.
And that my worry was when we play these read option teams. And, you know, Arizona State putting 60-plus on us last year, having trouble with Brett Hundley and UCLA that we didn't have against other teams. And, you know, I hadn't seen Boston College play, but I saw that Pitt shut them down. I assumed that we were going to do the same thing.
Right.
But you have to have a different defensive game plan against an option team than you do against a Stanford team. And it looked like we went out there and thought that, hey, we can just read and react, make plays, and shut these guys down. And we had not. I mean, there was no sense of how you defend the option. I don't care if it's Tommy Frazier in the 90s or Bud Wilkinson in Oklahoma in the 60s. It's all the same thing. It's read option football, and you got to have responsibilities, don't you think?
I agree. No, you do. But I, as I watched the game, I kept thinking to myself, everything seemed like it was a half step slow. It seemed as though the players, and I'm going to put this on a young team, kind of had that in their minds that they were going to be okay. They just have to line up and go and do it. So I don't know where to place the blame necessarily. So if you've got a good option scheme and you figured it out and people don't go and tackle, it doesn't matter. It's much like when you give the right running play on and you don't block it. It doesn't matter what's going on there. I just did not see execution. So and Jeremy, I'm agreeing with your point. I don't know if it was the scheme or if it was a matter of the execution. But I just didn't see guys flying around showing the type of tenacity that they had the week before. That's why I just think it's the byproduct of the letdown and the trap.
Yeah, and you may be right. I would just say, you know, you and I, neither one of us were at practice last week before the game. We weren't in those meeting rooms. We don't know, you know, if that defensive scheme just wasn't executed or whether or not we really didn't have the scheme. So I'll agree with you there. But I will say, when you have, you know, three players tackling the dive back without the ball,
right,
and letting the quarterback run free with the ball, or you have a reverse, a simple reverse, you know, go for a touchdown because a guy doesn't keep contain and doesn't
right.
play his responsibilities. You know, at some point, it just, you know, again, whether they weren't prepared or players or whether they weren't prepared as a coaching staff, it was a major, major letdown. And, you know, really disappointing. As high as you get off of that Stanford game, you know, that's as low as I think we have to feel from the Boston College game, the only solace being that it wasn't a conference game.
Well, let me throw this at you two guys. If special teams are not as good as they are, how bad is this game? You know, if you don't have a 51-yard return, if you don't have, you know, a miracle punt, if you don't have those things happen, how bad could this game have been?
It could have been bad. 10 punts for Chris Alvarado. That's a yeoman's night work for him. But what gets me is you're looking forward. If you are another Pac-12 coach, and you're looking at this game from an offensive game plan and how you attack the Trojans, well, first of all, the blueprint has just been laid out.
Mm-hmm.
But look at the next three games on the SC list. Okay, Oregon State, Mannion's not going to be a running quarterback, but Mike Riley is certainly as creative as they come. Arizona State, those are two riverboat gamblers as those coaches right there. This could get really interesting over these next three games, and you looking at what opposing coaches are going to be able to do. As you guys are both saying on this defensive plan, where is the obvious solution? I will say this, Sarkisian and Monday Morning Quarterback yesterday went and showed a couple plays saying, here's exactly what we worked on in practice, here are the players absolutely executing it correctly, and then showing the play in the game where the players do something absolutely different. As a coach, that has to be infuriating, but that's the reality of college football.
You don't know, you know, obviously there's blame to go around. Whether the coaches coached it and the players didn't execute one way or another, they got to be on the same page, and there's blame
no doubt.
Stark and that coaching staff takes for not getting these guys ready, but at the same time players play and they got to take responsibility as well. I agree with your point, Gary, that on the defensive side of the ball, you know, I said it in our pre-game or preseason call that we had when we talked about this on the podcast, is the teams that worry me are these teams that spread us out, give us multiple options, and how are these big linebackers we have? I mean, we've got J.R. Tavai and Anthony Sorrow and Scott Felix. These guys, you know, they look like weight room junkies, and that's nothing wrong with that, that can go up and play at Stanford and try to take on these linemen and penetrate and stuff a big, you know, power running game. But you put them out in space and ask them to tackle and stay with fast quarterbacks and backs and misdirection and option play. And we haven't done that well with this personnel over the last couple of years. And you know, I don't know how you coach that up or scheme that up. At some point, these guys got to make plays and they got to tackle in space. And, you know, you're exactly right. We don't have a lot of time to get right, because Oregon State's going to come at us with a lot of stuff, and Arizona State put up 60 plus points on us last year with a, you know, very, very high powered offense if Taylor Kelly gets healthy and is back in the game. And it's just on and on and on. I mean, the Pac-12 is going to be a brutal slate, and you're exactly right. They know how to attack us, and I'll flip it and say, you know, you look at what that Boston College defense did, blitzing and coming at this offensive line, this young offensive line at USC, and really putting a lot of packages in place to confuse these guys. You know, they got to get right in a hurry on the offensive side as well, not only to run the ball, but just to protect Cody Kessler, who's been fantastic and was even fantastic, I'll say, on Saturday under all the duress he was in. You know, they got to keep him upright. They got to keep him protected, even if we do become more of a pass-first type team.
And I want to talk about that really quick. I'm sorry, Mike. I want to talk about that really quick, just what Jeremy touched on. Sarkisian, in his Sunday night call, put a very interesting thing out there after three games, saying we need to reevaluate in the bye week what our offense is. What is our identity? He said, I want to run the ball. I've been clear about that. But perhaps our personnel right now and the way our offensive scheme is designed, maybe we do need to be pass first to set up the run. Mike, why don't you go with this first? What do you think about a coach saying that, and how accurate do you think that is right now?
Well, I think it's an honest assessment, and he's trying to do some soul searching. He's really trying to discover what the identity can be. And the point that we have made for a while is a young offensive line. When you guys talk about defensively worried about dealing with a quarterback that is good and can read and can throw the option and do those types of things, you're not going to see that all the time. What you can see all the time are defenses that want to bring a pressure blitz somewhere that they think that you're vulnerable. And USC showed that they were vulnerable, could not connect with what they were trying to do from a game plan perspective. So you've got young offensive linemen that do not understand protections. You've got young offensive linemen that have not done it before. I think that was part of the issue. Gary, you made the point earlier in the season, there were some veteran offensive linemen that, you know, kind of been discarded and put by the wayside. Well, if you made that decision and you think you're going to get the experience from these guys and they're going to do it, that's fine. I don't know if that's what Steve is talking about, but they have got to figure out a way to protect the quarterback. Here's another thing, and I don't want to overemphasize one player and one mistake, but I thought the turning point in the game was the Bryce Dixon drop. If he catches that and scores, I felt as though Boston College was really ready to kind of let it go and resign themselves to the fact that they were playing the number nine team in the country. That didn't happen. They stayed in the game. They fought back. So that was a specific turning point in this game. So Steve's got to think about that as well. If I'm going to be a passing team and I'm going to pass first to set up the run, can I protect and are my receivers going to make those plays?
I think you're absolutely right. You don't want to put it on a freshman, but boy, perfect call, perfect pass, right at the goal line, and SC's up 14-0 early. I think things are a little different in that one. And to your point, Mike, to Cody Kessler, if you're going at a 75% clip, four touchdowns, no interceptions. If you would have talked to the three of us last week and said these are going to be Kessler's numbers in the game and the Trojans are going to put up 31 points, I think all of us would have raised our hands and said, Trojan win, let's fly home with a smile on our face. That didn't happen.
Well, and I don't think that the staff needs to overreact to this, and I hope
Agreed.
That's not what Coach Sarkisian is doing. A knee-jerk reaction would be, yeah, we've got to change some things. But, Jeremy, I don't know if you ever had this happen, but I can remember having a loss going into a bye, and I don't think there's anything worse as a player than being in that situation. Why? Because the coaches are going to go back, reassess, change things, get back into fundamentals, all the things that you do not want to do as a player. But from a coaching perspective, you have to use it as an opportunity. So for Steve to say, you know, we're going to reexamine, we might do it a different way, he's got the luxury of some time to go back and have the players buy into there is an issue, we have identified a problem, now we've got to address it. So there will be a lot of work that's done over the next couple of weeks to determine where it is that they can get better, what they have to do. I think it's pretty easy to identify the mistakes. Now it's going to come down to, do I have the right personnel to do that? And if I want to change my philosophy, what personnel do I need in there?
Yeah, and I will say, I personally, if I'm USC right now, as much as it stinks to have a bye week and have this taste of losing in your mouth for 2 weeks, it couldn't come at a better time. I mean, you've now got three games under your belt with a very, very young team. You're coming off a loss that's a little bit of a reality check for your young team that may have been a little too high on themselves. And now you get to go back to the drawing board and have some time to do exactly what you just said, Mike. And, you know, one of the things you said early in the year was, you know, what about this rotation of offensive linemen?
Yeah.
It seemed to work for the first couple weeks. It did not seem to work, whatever was happening, did not seem to work on Saturday against Boston college. And I think, you know, is now the time, excuse me, going into the fourth game where you potentially, and coming out of a bye week, where you potentially say who are not only our best five players in terms of talent on the offensive line and times in terms of guys that can get off the ball and run block, you know, make sure that they pass protect well, but who are our best five guys as a cohesive unit that can work together on blitz pickup? Because I can guarantee you after Saturday, you know, the same twists and blitzes and confusing things that had guys like Damian Mama and others sort of blocking nobody as two guys ran by, you know, those things can't happen going forward. We're going to see it over and over and over, and we're going to continue to be tested up front until we prove we can stop it and keep Cody upright. But it's got to happen. I mean, we cannot go into an Oregon State game, you know, basically letting guys run by unblocked. It's one thing to get beat, and there were times where some guys on Saturday got beat. You know, you're trying to block a guy, and he beats you and gets a sack. But more often than not, what was happening is total missed assignments, you know, no sense of, you know, pass protection, blitz pickup, and guys coming free totally left unblocked. And that to me, you know, it looked as glaring on the offense as it did on the defense, was that sense that guys just weren't in the right place doing what they were supposed to do. And if that alone could have been corrected, it shouldn't have been a game. But when you do that, those fundamentals wrong, you know, it's not only a close game, we get, you know, absolutely, you know, get our butts handed to us.
Let me ask you guys this. Mike, you brought up the point earlier, and it's one that I've been totally agreeing with for the last, whatever, it's been 72 hours since the game. Which one is bigger? USC rushing for 20 yards or giving up 450? You can talk schemes, you can talk all you want, but you guys were both linemen. I got to imagine every lineman on that team was, you know, flying home on that plane going, holy crap, what just happened right there? How do you move forward with those two things from the sense of a lineman after what just happened?
Well, let me take that first real fast before Mike talks, because I do think that, well, I think Sark's point on his Sunday night call and on his Monday morning, you know, talks that he's had with the media, I think what he's seeing is that, look, Boston College came up and basically committed themselves to stuffing the run. And they were running blitzes, running eight and nine guys into the box to make sure that we were not going to run the ball on them successfully. And I think it was a little bit, I know Sark used the word stubborn, for us to basically say, you know what, we're just going to do that anyway, as opposed to taking what the defense gives you and using the pass to open up the running game. And I, you know, I do think there's a sense that that happened on Saturday. So, you know, while we talk about becoming more of a pass-first offense, I'm not saying we abandon the run, and I know Mike wouldn't say that we abandon the run and just start throwing the ball all over the yard, but you have to take what the defense gives you. And no matter how good our players are, at sometimes when you've got five or six guys blocking eight or nine, you know, we're just outnumbered, and we need to get the ball out to our skill players. And I don't think we really did that. I think we've sort of tried to force things in the run that weren't necessarily there. And I think that was an error that I think, you know, you've heard Sark say, you know, he wished he had it to do over again. Mike, what do you think?
Here's a given in this. If you've got eight men in the box, the quarterback needs to recognize that and do something about it. Either just get out of the running play, have a hot read, whatever it is. That's just something that has to be adjusted at the line of scrimmage and early on in the game. The commitment to running is something that is a mindset that you have to have. And so many teams run a little bit, and don't have success, and they go away from it. And afterwards they say to themselves, why did we get away from the running game? So I thought as though Coach Sarkisian had made a conscious decision, we are going to run the football. But that having been said, you've got to have a quarterback that you trust, like Cody, that he will make the adjustment and get it done. Gary, your original question was, what concerns me more was what USC had rushing in 20 yards or the 450 that Boston College hung on you. I can rationalize giving up 452 yards to a quarterback like Tyler Murphy and a unique offense, and maybe you weren't there and maybe it just wasn't happening for you. You can adjust. What I can't rationalize is 20 yards rushing. That tells me that there is a problem. That tells me that on top of you trying to do it, having the commitment to do it, you could not succeed even though you continue to try to get it done. There's nothing wrong with the running back there. So the biggest concern that I have coming out of that game was not defensively and the mistakes that were made, that they were there. My biggest concern was what I saw from the offensive line, and they just weren't there, didn't have it. Jeremy talked about the protection part of it. That was all over the place, and I can understand the youthful confusion, but you should be able to line up with big guys and run the football. So my biggest concern coming out of that game is exactly that, the inability to run the football.
You talk about them lining up with eight guys in there. I always remember Norm Chow saying, you know, if they play up, you throw. If they play back, you run. Simple game.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And I was a little bit surprised by that, what Cody Kessler was struggling with. And later on in the game, he was able to kind of get his rhythm and get some things, and some receivers started to make some plays for him. It was one of those things where they started off okay. They said, I've got it. And then all of a sudden, Boston College figured some things out, started to get physical with them, started to have some success, and the thing snowballed to and this is to Cody Kessler's credit. He hung in there. He stayed with it. He did everything that he could. You know, he's probably the only guy that can walk away from that. I don't think he feels good, but I think he's the only guy that I can sit there and say, all right, he's okay. That's not the problem.
Punter.
Yeah, punter's good.
Okay, let's move forward and talk about, okay, after three games, we've seen 25% of the Trojans' schedule right now. You've got a little bit of a sense of what they are. What do you like right now, what you were seeing? Let's start off on offense. Jeremy, go first.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I think Cody's playing fantastically. I mean, 71% of his passes and no turnovers. That's all you got to say to me. I mean, you know, as much
as pretty impressive goose egg, yeah.
It was. I mean, I didn't expect it. I'll be honest with you. I expected him to be a strong leader and maybe have a better year than last year. You know, with Sark calling plays and spreading the ball around to a few more weapons but I did not expect him to be playing the way he is. With, you know, the decision-making that he's having. And to me, you know, and I know Buck Allen has been strong the first couple of games and obviously didn't have a lot of room to run on Saturday, but I think those two guys are the strength of our team. And Nelson Aguilar is having a great year, finding his spots, and I think, you know, we got some great skill players. But that, to me, is the strength of our team. It starts with Cody Kessler getting us in the right situations, making the right decisions, not turning the ball over, being incredibly accurate. Even some of the things he's made mobility-wise and scrambling around and the little push pass that he had on Saturday, things like that are just impressive plays, turning some negatives into positives. To me, he's the strength of our offense right now.
I would probably mirror most of what Jeremy said there and build upon that, that somebody like George Farmer, who has a little experience, you've got to figure out a way to get him involved as well. Somebody can come through you. There's that balance between being really young and somebody that's got some experience. And I think when you reexamine what you're doing offensively, you might say, that's somebody that we need to utilize. That's something that is critical for us to have long-term success. So if I gave both you guys a choice, you know, here's your perfect world, I'm going to give you a really good quarterback who understands and doesn't make mistakes, and I'm going to give you a really good running back, and now go make your offensive line and go make your wide receivers work, you'd probably take that. You know,
no doubt.
I think, yeah, and so I don't think it's as bad as we probably thought it was late Saturday night, but I do think there's a lot of work on this. But from the offense, yeah, you've got a good quarterback and a good running back. Now just find the receivers that can be consistently there for you and make the plays. If you've got receivers that can make plays for you consistently, I think this offense clicks.
And I'll add to that, I was talking to JJ yesterday, Mike, and he was saying on George Farmer, he's like, hey, George Farmer, you know, is going to be matched up at worst against their number two corner. You know, their
right.
number one guy is on Nelson, so you got George on number
right.
two. George is the fastest guy on the USC football team. You have not stretched him down the field yet. And JJ's point, at least try.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least back the defense up. You've got that weapon like George. And I would even add Randall Telfer to that. You've got a senior tight end. You know, Sark coached the Mackey Award winner last year up at Washington. I would have expected to see a little bit more from Randall so far. He's caught a couple passes, so I wouldn't be at all surprised if he starts becoming a little bit more a part of the offense as things go along. Let's flip it over to defense and, again, talk about what you like so far. Jeremy, start with you.
Well, I think it's going to be easy to say Lawrence Williams, but and certainly the penetration he gets up front and the play that he's had has been fantastic. But I'm going to go a little different than the obvious and say the secondary. I've actually been incredibly impressed with the secondary of this team. I think that everyone thought the strength was going to be, you know, the front seven are we going to be able to cover people, find a cornerback here, a corner, you know. I actually think the secondary on our team has played exceptionally well. Now, that said, we're now going into the heart of the schedule where we're going to see teams like Sean Mannion and Oregon State and Taylor Kelly at Arizona State and some of the better passing quarterbacks in the conference that have better wide receivers, you know, they will test that secondary. But I have been impressed by the secondary and versus my expectations more than I have any other part of the defense. And, you know, I think that's been a great strength.
I'm going to try to stay optimistic with this defense. I know that the linebacking core had a rough outing, and I'm almost ready to give them a pass if they can come back and show me. So I'm not going to pass total judgment on it. To mimic what you're trying to do every week against a running quarterback like you saw, I just don't know how it's going to happen, and I don't know how they get it done. Are they a group that's not bright enough to pick it up? I don't think that's the case. Are they a group that's not physical enough? I don't think that's the case. You know, can they run with everybody? I think that remains to be seen. So I don't want to pass judgment on them right now. To kind of go along with what Jeremy was saying, though, it's a surprise to see what's happening in the secondary. I don't think that there's any way you could have called that. I don't think that there's any way that you could anticipate with how many young players are part of, you know, the plan. And I'm just trying to think to myself, you know, hey, I'm a true freshman, and I'm going to have to go guard Ty Montgomery one-on-one, you know, the best player in the Pac-12. And then it gets done. So I don't have anything to add to what Jeremy has said. That is clearly something that was unexpected, but it's an unexpected surprise that I think everybody can hang their hat on.
Let me ask you this. They are moving Sua Cravens up a lot and playing him closer to the line.
Yeah.
On paper, I can totally understand why you're looking at that. I'm looking at Sua right now saying I don't feel the same impact from him as we saw at times from the safety position. What do you guys think about this move so far?
Well, I think it's not necessarily something that the coaching staff might want to do, but I think it's something that the coaching staff feels like it almost has to do. And, again, I'll go back and talk about the fact that, you know, we've got some linebackers right now, especially the outside backers, who are not playing very well. And they don't play well in space, and they don't tackle well in space. And as much as, you know, I hate to call guys out and do any of that sort of stuff, but, I mean, it's just the reality of even in the Stanford game, there were so many plays missed by that position during the course of the game that could have maybe iced the game even sooner than it was done. I think, you know, they're looking and saying, you know, we don't have, you know, you think of the past couple years with Deion Bailey and that type of an outside linebacker type position and the plays he made not only in the pass game but also in the run game and coming up and tackling in space. And right now, that to me is the weakness of our defense, is those backers on the outside of that four-man linebacker unit trying to make plays on the edge in space and tackle athletic backs and receivers and tight ends and others. And that is, I think, you know, if I'm Justin Wilcox, that's what's keeping me up at night, is who do I look at from a personnel standpoint and think that I can find ways to shift schemes and do different things and get guys in positions that can make those plays. And I think he's looking at Sua and saying, this is the best choice I have. As much as I hate having him in the back, we're going to have to bring him up. And I watch that game Saturday and spent a lot of time looking at those positions. And if I'm Justin Wilcox and I know he's doing the same thing, I think he's doing it out of necessity.
And I don't disagree with that, but when you've got somebody that can do many things for you, I think back to, you know, Troy Polamalu and, you know, where he was able to come and make some plays because he understands. I'll go back to, you know, Jeremy, when you played Sammy Knight, and, you know, the fact that he knew where to go and he understood and did that work. And I saw Sua come in on a run blitz, make a great play. I've also seen Sua come in and miss a tackle on a quarterback that could ice something. So I think they're going to continue to do that. I think that's in the DNA of your defensive coordinator, right? He wants to make
yes.
some things happen there. So I don't think they're going to get away from that. But what they've got to do is address some of the problems that you're talking about. If the linebackers are not making plays that they had anticipated, and understand, this is a new defense. You know, we talk so much about, oh, the offense is different, the offense is different. It's a different defense, and it's going to take some time for those guys to get acclimated to it. So as far as Sua coming up and making plays, I'd like to see them continue to do that. You guys just saw what happens when you put pressure on the quarterback and where it's at from what happened to Cody Kessler. I think Sua can be that guy, and I think he can also come up and make some plays against the run. So I would not abandon that now. In fact, I might even think about expanding it a little bit.
Very interesting. I'll tell you, one guy who is playing well and allowing them to do this with Sua, I think Gerald Bowman has been one of the more pleasant surprises on the football team through the first three games. I think he's really playing well back at the safety spot. Okay, guys, that's interesting stuff heading into the bye week. Today at practice, Sarkisian held out Leonard Williams. He held out Randall Telford, Juju Smith, Trey Madden. He just said, hey, we're going to try to rest up a little bit for this bye week, and we'll see what happens going into Oregon State. So we'll do this again next week. For Jeremy Hogan, Mike Lamb, this is Gary Paskowitz. You're listening to the We Are SC podcast.